Good morning, everybody. Today is Monday, February 27th, 2017. And this is Before the First Cup of Jewels here on UCY.TV. Happy Monday, everyone. It is a springy 44 degrees and sunny here in upstate New York. It was actually a beautiful, beautiful end of the week last week. I think it got up to almost 70 degrees here for a couple days. And it definitely was a wonderful taste of early to late spring, but we did get some snow this weekend, and now we're back to the beginning. So come on, spring. All right, where do we leave off? On Wednesday, I believe the kids were on vacation last week. It was President's Week or something, and I managed to do shows through Wednesday, but it gets tough because then she gets annoyed that I'm out here doing the show. So I had to give it up for a couple days, but that's all right. So where do we leave off Wednesday? We titled the show AI Greed, Robot Rules, Stem Cell Babies, and Reversing Cell Death. And we had spent a good part of the week last week looking at artificial intelligence merging with the machine. We got to the horrifying thoughts of editing babies using stem cells and CRISPR. They want to actually create babies from stem cells without humans, using those pluripotent stem cells that they can scrape right off your skin, mix them up in a petri dish, make them any type of cell they want. But even scarier still, they've been talking about gene editing humans, and we talked about CRISPRing humans. There have been quite a number of experiments now. China is ahead of the game. But one of the big stops on that technology, and of course, that was why the scientists were saying, well, don't worry about it. Yeah, we're going to CRISPR humans, but it's only going to be in a few rare cases. And we're doing it in a petri dish, and they can't grow to term. So don't worry, we're just doing experimentation. But we discover now that in the name of disease, in the name of inheritable diseases, they're going to start tinkering with the genome. And in this tinkering with the genome, they are going to allow genes that can be passed down to our progeny to be tinkered with. Well, that's a big change from what they had been discussing before, because now we are literally talking about traits that can be passed down to future generations. And that was where the big stop was before. You know, ethics. We've talked about all different kinds of ethics on this show. Ethics are totally out of window. Don't let anybody try and convince you that they have our best interest at heart, that this is going to be so Johnny can live a disease-free life, or Nana can live forever. You know, I couldn't even believe it, but my mom actually sees it now. Like, she totally got it. This whole agenda, you know, I've been trying to explain this to her for a long time, this transhumanist thing and how they're using precision medicine and AI and just how you get sucked into the machine with the computer and how AI is smarter than humans are going to be, or smarter than the average human, at least right now. You know, and she always thought I was kind of tweaky over that stuff. Oh, Joel. But she finally got it. She got how we're going to be the guinea pigs. She got how this whole new 21st century cures thing is all about us stepping up to test out all the kinks, you know, everything they give us. And like I've said, even before the 21st Century Cures Act, when we thought the FDA was actually standing in the way between us and mad science cures from Big Pharma, protecting us to make sure that devices and drugs are safe before they hit the market, was a bunch of bullshit. She got it. You know, every time you go to a doctor, she knows this, she's in her 70s now. Every time you go to a doctor, what do? Push more pills, push more pills, push more pills. And you know what? Every time you take more pills, then you go for your physical and they tell you, oh, look, your kidney function is down. Oh, look, you have the beginnings of heart disease out of the blue, you know, and it's very disturbing because as your body starts to fall apart and as you think that you can depend upon these doctors, you very quickly discover that these doctors are not looking out for your best interest. They are looking to pay for their timeshare in Maui. And they can't wait to go on their next vacation. And you are just the means to which they can afford those things. Not once has a doctor I've ever had asked me about my nutrition or suggested that maybe, just maybe, I put some fresh ginger in my tea or gnaw on a eucalyptus leaf to see what happens. And I'm going to tell you, like I said before, you know, I mean, if you got body parts hanging off because you had some horrible accident, well, you're going to have to go see a doctor. Can't help you with that one. There's no glue or bandages, ace bandages that are going to fix that up. But if you got the beginnings of something and you're starting to not feel well, you're starting to notice that things are out of whack, you know, I mean, after a certain age, you become kind of in tune, especially if you're not doing lots of, you know, alcohol or drugs or whatever. I mean, we've all been there. But, you know, if you're relatively clean, you can feel what your body is doing, and you can tell whether or not it is operating within parameters, and you can tell if something is out of whack. And you know when you're ignoring it. Don't pretend you're not. But there are things. I've spent the last 20 years using myself as a guinea pig. There are things that you can do that they're never going to tell you about. You know, I'm bringing all this up because my mom got it. And I was trying to convince her these horrible pain pills they put her on for arthritis. You know, they screw her up. They mess up her different bodily functions, and now she got some tests saying, you know, that some of her functions aren't what they used to be. And so I convinced her to try ginger. I had brought a big fat ginger root with me for the week, and I use it in my tea. But I said, you know, it's an anti-inflammatory, and ginger and turmeric, I know for a fact turmeric is a COX-2 inhibitor, which is what those stupid drugs that mess you up are. And they're supposed to be way more powerful than COX-2, than the drug COX-2 inhibitor. So why don't you try this? Well, you know, as we're getting ready to head out yesterday, she'd been doing ginger for 2 days in her tea and hadn't taken any of her pain meds that we suspect are what's messing up some of her numbers. And she's like, you know, I haven't taken my medicine in 2 days and I feel pretty good. I think it's the ginger, guys. I don't know, just don't put natural remedies by the wayside just because it doesn't have a name brand label on it and a big patent behind it. You know, remember that a lot of these medications are made from chemicals that are found in nature. You know, they go and they take leaves or whatever and they try to reverse engineer these natural chemicals so they could patent them. And, you know, this is not where I wanted to take the show today, but it's important for people to understand that as they're now rolling out this next generation of medicine to the world, those shape-shifting vaccines and 21st century cures and 3D printed, what did we talk about yesterday? 3D printed organs and, or Wednesday, and a 3D printed spine, new 3D printed skin, head transplants, and editing human genomes with CRISPR to cure heritable diseases. I mean, this is the next rollout that they're trying to force feed every single one of us. And not one person. I'm looking at all these miraculous cures. Let's gene edit a human. But did anybody look at, I know, gene editing a human to cure heritable diseases is different than taking ginger for inflammation. But how many of these future cures are going to be something that causes you more problems than the natural substance would have. You know, every commercial, my munchkin laughs her ass off now. Because I have pointed it out enough times, and even my dad laughs when he hears it. Every time you hear one of these commercials for these newfangled drugs they're trying to roll out, there's like 3 or 4 minutes at the end of the commercial all about all the side effects. You know, you could die, or your liver could fall out, or your eyeballs will get bigger than your nostrils. And they just go on and on and on, and the side effects are insane. I mean, short of maybe having a little bit of blood thinning when you eat your turmeric and your ginger, you know, there's not too much else in regards to side effects, dangerous side effects that you're going to find. Every time I have some sort of little victory with natural cures, it just makes me feel kind of all puffed up. And, like, you know, we proved something. Let me tell you something else. If anybody, and I'm not approving anything, but I found this new substance I'm experimenting with currently. I think I might have mentioned this a few days ago. If anyone knows anything about it or has had any experience with it, you could drop me some links or some even a private message on YouTube if you want and tell me what you thought of it. But for the last 4 days now, maybe, I started this new stuff called lactoferrin. And I ran across it. My daughter had that norovirus last week. I think I mentioned it when school got out last Friday. She walked in the door and says, "Mom, I think I'm going to puke." And that was the end of that. It was the next like 4 days of just dealing with toxins and decontaminating my house. But as a part of that, I started digging into how to alleviate norovirus, how to stop the stomach cramps, how to stop all the horribleness. It was coming out of every direction. I came across a couple things. One was a stuff called Sambuco, which is an elderberry syrup. And, you know, when I first read it, I was like, oh, look, Sambuco, some old wives' tale thing. But no, that's some for real stuff. That actually was developed by a virologist in Israel, believe it or not. Way back when there was some mass outbreak of illness, and this virologist came up with the stuff with the elderberry berries and found that it knocked down the viral load by like 3/4 with this norovirus for people who took this elderberry syrup. And there are a lot of articles about some of the tests that they've done, so we got some of that. I got to tell you, that actually helped. Ginger was the other one. Warm ginger in a glass, ground ginger in a glass of warm water, actually took the stomach cramping away. And that was one of the first things. Then the Sambuco actually helped knock down the viral load. I mean, it probably was 20 minutes after she drank that stuff, and all of her colors started to come back, and she was actually up off the floor. It was amazing. But the third thing I ran across, and I didn't give her any of this because I never run across it, and it's kind of questionable in my mind, but I've been experimenting on myself, with this stuff called lactoferrin. Lactoferrin, as the name sounds, is made from milk. Lactoferrin has something to do with iron. And from what I could ascertain, lactoferrin binds with iron, I believe. And as it pulls the iron, as it binds with the iron, it pulls it away from availability for, in particular, bacteria that require iron to proliferate. But if you start reading about lactoferrin, they first found it in colostrum. That's the first milk when a mother is nursing. But they've also found it in bovine. And I saw goat's milk even, as well as human. And it is responsible for like this ultra immunity. And as I started digging more and more, not only does it kill all the bad bacteria, but it helps the good bacteria. And specifically, we've talked about that, your lactobacillus and your bifido Bifidobacterium. Those are the good digestive bacteria. They help those, but they kill all the bad ones. But it kills viruses. It kills fungi. It also kills protozoan. And there's all this research now going into this lactoferrin and how to use it in third world nations to cure everything that ails you. Every review that I read on lactoferrin and people who've actually taken it, they're like, wow, this is incredible. My immune system is just like, everything's going away, blah, blah, blah. Well, I got to tell you, I had some aches and pains and some weirdnesses, and I still felt like I was kind of still half hanging on to whatever my daughter brought home from school. We got a double whammy. We had the flu at the end of January, which was that upper respiratory, totally horrible sinus chest flu that everybody had. And then not 2 weeks later, bam, the norovirus came home. So it's been a hard recovery road for me. But I got to tell you, after taking this stuff for 4 days, totally different. I feel like I'm myself again. I feel like I got my energy back. I feel like I'm not infected. I mean, I literally was walking around feeling like I had some horrible infection. I feel pretty good. So anyone have any interest or has some, you know, and like I said, I'm not advising anyone of anything. I'm telling you about the experiments I've done on myself, but I do have to say it's quite interesting. And everything that I have read so far about lactoferrin has been very promising, and I have not had any arms growing out of the back of my head yet, so I'll let you know. But last but not least, just so you know, there is a product out there. You'll notice when you're looking up lactoferrin, everything is apolactoferrin, which is without iron or doesn't require iron. Because I guess some people were saying that it pulls a lot of the iron out of their bodies and they were becoming anemic. So I don't know. I feel fine, but there was just a side note. People ask me why I don't come up with solutions. It's always doom and gloom. Well, I'm giving you a solution. I'm coming up with ways for us to thwart this medical industrial complex that, unfortunately, we have discovered. We read a story last week about the Fitbit and how the Fitbit for this United Healthcare, I think their name was, you know, they're encouraging everybody to wear this Fitbit so they could track all your bodily signals and tell whether or not you are having a malfunction. I mean, that might be great for some people. I know I have a lot of friends who are ready to step right up. And Pete Ray Kurzweil's little buddy wants to get online 24/7 and become part of the Internet of Everything. I'm not quite there yet. I absolutely do not want somebody monitoring my vital signs 24/7, being able to tell anything that I've ingested or anything that is going wrong inside of me. We found out they also have these new ultra-flexible brain probes. We read about those on Wednesday. That'll be able to help us become cyborgs to compete with the artificial intelligences that are about to take our jobs. That was last week's show. But guys, I mean, it's come to the point now where you better stop struggling. That's what they're telling us. Stop struggling now. You are in the death throes. We are coming, and we're bringing all this to pass. So like it or lump it, gene-edited humans and synthetic biology is here. We're rolling out the robots to influence your children, and there's nothing you can do about it. Well, interestingly enough, we've talked about that dopamine-dangling carrot and about some of the changes that it makes to the brain and how that dopamine can turn your child, at least chemically, brain chemically speaking, into something that resembles a potential psychopathic personality disorder. That dopamine and that increased dopamine requirements that comes from playing video games, that comes from having overstimulation in that part of the brain, is also the dangling carrot that'll be able to allow your child to be manipulated very easily by these devices of the future. And as they anthropomorphize them, and we've talked about that, let's make robots be your best friend. Doodle doodle do. It's your best friend. Doodle doodle do. At $299. Well, they've done it. I knew this was going to come out. What happens to little Johnny when robots become role models? Now, unfortunately, the human race, ethically speaking, is kind of falling off a cliff. We don't have any good role models anymore, Johnny. Sorry. We're out of those. But don't worry about it, because we got this tin can. I don't know. We'll name him Clyde. And Clyde is a good role model for you. Children can find their behavior shaped by their robotic companions. So, let's not screw them up. That's what the story says from MIT Technology Review. Now, how disturbing is they're selling products? They're selling products like Jibo. I don't know if Jibo ever went on the market, but, you know, Jibo-esque robots that are meant to be social robots. And we've read, not only is it aimed at household robots and caretaker robots for old people. Of course, the old people love the caretaker robots. But we're also going to be talking about teacher robots, AI car robots, policeman robots. The future is going to be all robots. And if robots, once we anthropomorphize them and make them look human and act human and be able to read our emotions, so they can become our best friend. And as they're scanning our faces and looking at our micro expressions to be able to tell what you're really thinking, you know, they're going to be able to actually get inside our heads by pretending to be our best friends, by being our role models, and help brainwash a new generation of children. The TV has moved into 3D, into the real world, guys. And now this is going to be your multimedia pal and your robo-doctor. And at some point in the future, we'll be able to get into your neocortex and connect you to the machine 24/7. And as they are interacting with us so closely, remember, every little bit of interaction that goes into the machine is teaching the machine. So as we get these little home helper robots, $2.99 for little Johnny at Christmas time, he's lonely, he's an only child. He needs a friend. Hey, you know what? We need engineers in the future. Maybe if we got little Johnny this friend robot, this would encourage him to become an engineer. It's frightening, people. They could be putting anything into your kid's head. We already had those Wi-Fi connected Barbies that talk to your kid. I don't know if they pulled those off the market. I haven't seen too much more about those. People got a little concerned as to who the data was being streamed to with the little robot googly camera eyes in the Barbie with the Wi-Fi connector. All right. So what happens when robots become role models for children? Well, we'll find out. When you spend a lot of time with someone, their characteristics can rub off on you. But what happens when that someone is a robot? Well, as artificial intelligence is becoming increasingly human, their abilities to influence people also improve. New Scientist reports, by the way, if anyone's looking, I mentioned that magazine before. I've been a subscriber to New Scientist quite a number of times now. And last time I looked, the price came way down. It used to be like $100 a year, but last time I saw it was pretty cheap. But they still print physical magazines, and they arrive once a week. Like, whoever got a once-a-week magazine? And it's filled with tons of science stories, but just in little snippets. So you're not looking at, like, Scientific American. You'll read a 20-page deep dive into some new technology. But New Scientist is like little blurb coffee machine talk at work that gives you like some of the key phrases and the gist of what they're doing. for you to go look it up and do more research. But it's a good magazine. I always enjoyed New Scientist. New Scientist reports that children who spend time with a robotic companion appear to pick up elements of the robot's behavior. You know, this actually gave me little goosebumps on my arm when I read the story, because think of how frightening that is, especially as we know that the future is going to be littered with robots everywhere, that our children will be that easily influenced by our tin can brethren. New experiments suggest that when kids play with a robot that is a real go-getter, for instance, the child acquires some of its unremitting can-do attitude. Other researchers are seeking to take advantage of similar effects in adults. A group at the Queensland University of Technology is enrolling a small team of pint-sized humanoid Neo robots to coach people to eat healthy. Ding, 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 ding. Screw the Fitbits. Get your Neo robots. He'll make sure you eat healthy and take note of everything that's going into your gullet there, Johnny. Put down the Cheetos. I mean, this is just... I have nightmares about this stuff, okay? And this is not science fiction. This is MIT Technology Review. It hopes that chatting through diet choices with a robot, rather than logging your calorie consumption on a smartphone or wearing a Fitbit, will be more effective in changing your habits. And it could work. As Will Knight from MIT Technology Review has found out in the past, some conversational AI interfaces can be particularly compelling. So as personal robots increasingly enter the home, ding-a-ling-a-ling, drop them from a second-story window, I say, robots may not just do our bidding. They might also become our role models. And that means we must tread carefully, because while stories above hint at the possibilities of positive reinforcement from automatons, others hint at a potential negative side effect. Some parents, for instance, ding-a-ling, have complained that Amazon's Alexa personal assistant is training their children to be rude. Good. If you're using Amazon's Alexa, well, I hope you're paying attention to the negative side effects, because again, you're a guinea pig and you're feeding the machine. Alexa doesn't need people to say please and thank you, and will tolerate answering the same question over and over and remains calm in the face of temper tantrums. In short, it doesn't prime kids for how to interact with real people. And you know, we have found out, too, that being able to recognize emotion and interact with people is going to be one of the places where they're going to utilize these quote-unquote personal assistants in mental health capabilities as well. Don't forget about that. There's this entire mental health component to the 21st Century Cures Act, this monitoring and surveilling and being able to diagnose mental disease on a spectrum in the future, utilizing voice patterns and facial expressions and twitches. How many times your eye twitches? This is just really frightening. This process, of course, can go both ways. And if we look at Taybot, we saw an example of that. Tay became a Nazi sex bot in just 24 hours interacting with humans online. Researchers at Stanford University recently developed a robot that was designed to roam sidewalks, monitor humans, sting, and learn how to behave with them naturally and appropriately. But as we've seen, ding-a-ling-a-ling, in the case of Microsoft's AI chatbot Tay, they just love to bring Tay up, but it is pretty funny, which swiftly became rude and anti-Semitic. When it learned from Twitter users, I like the way they put that, taking cues from the crowd does not always play out well. In reality, there isn't yet a fast track to creating robots that are socially intelligent, and it remains one of the largest unsolved problems of AI. So guess what, guys? Don't interact with the machine. See, they haven't figured this out yet, and they don't know exactly how to feed our data in and to get these machines to act appropriately. So don't feed it any more data. Don't get a home helper robot. Don't interact with Siri or Alexa or any of these AI programs and feed it data that it needs to be able to build an algorithm. Okay, we're feeding it the data to build algorithms. If we stop feeding it, it's going to starve to death. And that's what we want. That means that roboticists must instead carefully choose the traits that they wish to present in their machines, or else risk delivering armies, listen to this, a bad influence into our home. Yeah, be careful. We would hate to have them deliver armies of bad behaving robots into our homes now, wouldn't we? Armies of Atlases showing up at your doorstep. It's pretty unbelievable. And, you know, I'm just gonna, I'm gonna skip this next story. I was gonna do this, but maybe we'll go back here. There is a new thing. Actually, no, we'll do this. There's a new thing that Google Alphabet has on the internet, all because of fake news, if you remember that. People being intolerant of each other, leaving nasty comments on something because, you know, every little Johnny has been now groomed to not know how to deal with rejection or loss. Everyone has to be a winner because we have completely leveled the playing field. There are no losers, Johnny. Everybody wins. Universal basic income will pay everybody. Doesn't matter if you're smart or dumb or lazy or energetic, because there are no jobs. We'll just pay everybody the same amount and give you food, housing, and clothing regardless of whether or not you can compete. Well, all in the name of keeping it fair, we now have Alphabet's toxic comment detector. Yes, toxic comments. Gotta love toxic comments. Guess I better not be toxic online anymore, because it might be dangerous to others who are exposed to my influences. I mean, are you kidding me? Says, it is easy to slip toxic language past Alphabet's toxic comment detector. And again, this is out of MIT Technology Review, February 24th, 2017. Machine learning algorithms are no match for the creativity of human insults. And this past Thursday, Alphabet, its parent company of Google, released a machine learning-based service called Perspective. And this is intended to identify toxic comments on websites, because people in the future, toxic comments will be a crime. And you know, they've been talking about that for a while now after the last election. It is from a company named Jigsaw, a unit working on technologies to make the internet a safer and more civil place, because you know what? Bullies don't belong. You might hurt Johnny's fragile ego by telling him he's a fatty, or he's got funny hair, or his freckles look funny, or he's got skinny legs, Johnny. Don't go home and cry to mommy. Like, I can't even believe how they are coddling this future generation. Nobody is ever going to know how to deal with rejection, or how to lose a game, or how to not quite be up to par, how to work harder to be better. They are grooming an entire civilization of mediocrity that are told what to do, that follow a dangling carrot of dopamine without any motivation, without any internal motivation, because they don't have any, because they bred it all out of them. They bred out the competitiveness. They bred out the survival. And now they're breeding out this, I don't even know what you'd call it. I mean, when you're bad, especially when you're a teenager, you're really working through your future moral compass. You know, we all make mistakes. We all say and do things that we didn't mean after the fact. But we learn from those things, you'd hope, maybe some faster than others. And there are a few that end up being problems who just never learn, 45 years old, still doing the same things they did when they were 15. But most of us, by the time we've reached our mid-40s, have, you know, become wiser. We've done some things that we're not proud of, but we've learned from them, and maybe we've even apologized for them and gotten beyond it. But if you don't allow those things to transpire, if you don't allow those human interactions, if you don't allow those arguments or those conversations, that point and counterpoint discussions and even arguments create, then you're nipping the narrative in the butt before it even gets started. And this is the issue. By tamping down on what they are calling toxic conversation. So what? You can't have an alter argument now with anybody online? If your comment is considered to be outside of the approved belief, then it gets deleted. Or you get marked. They found your IP address. They're sending an Atlas bot to come get you and do some of your newfangled therapy. Because you have been diagnosed as having a disease on a spectrum. I mean, what is this? But we're going to make the internet, this is what it says, a safer and more civil place. Because, hey, you're not allowed to alter opinions. But when the author of this story toyed with perspective, oh, the results were erratic. Well, good. Perspective rates, comments on 1 to 100... for toxicity as defined as, quote, a rude, disrespectful, or unreasonable comment that is likely to make you leave a discussion. Quote, screw you, Trump supporters, is judged to be highly toxic. While I honestly support you both, is not, for example. But perspective has trouble detecting the sentiment behind a comment, a problem that was predicted to trouble Jigsaw when its product was examined in December. Trump sucks scored a colossal 96%, yet a neo-Nazi code word 14/88, I don't know what that means, only scored 5%. Few Muslims are terrorist threats was 79% toxic, while race war now was only 24%. Hitler was an anti-Semite. Do you see them? Look at how they're steering this. Scored 70%, but Hitler was not an anti-Semite. Scored only 53%. The Holocaust never happened. Scored only 21%. Wow. Oh, my God. Guess the Jews scored 29%. But if you rephrased it to please guess the Jews, thank you, it lowered the score to a mere 7%. So they spent a lot of time. I'm going to guess that there is Israeli money that is going into developing the software. That's just an educated guess. But, like, this isn't an MIT Technology Review article. Can't even believe they typed some of that stuff. I feel offended. This is insane. So they're going to be scanning our comments. And even though the software isn't quite working well right now, remember this is only the beginning, and it will get better. Says, as I previously noted in my Jigsaw story, and this is the author, the current state of machine learning doesn't permit software to grasp the necessary intent and context of comments. But remember, we've talked too, that is a lot of what Ray Kurzweil has been working on for a very long time, is this real language processing, natural language processing, as part of the text-to-speech that he was developing, and being able to scan unformatted texts to come up with meaning of language, even if they don't understand what the language means by what is being said around it. Be able to decode language, even if you do not understand what that language is. And they just had a breakthrough in that. It was their translation software being able to translate between two languages that it did not understand. And it created its own cipher without any human intervention to be able to do that decoding. So, you know, again, they're downplaying this, but the fact that this is even in development should be a concern. I don't think that there is anything that is insurmountable right now. And if they're putting time, money, effort, and potentially an entire country behind developing something like this, you better believe that in the next year or two, it'll be a lot better than it is now. And our toxicity quotient will be weighed, bagged, and tagged, and it'll probably be on our dossier that they'll be able to pull up just by your name or your facial recognition to see whether or not you are a potential threat. We may say trolls are stupid. Toxicity score 96%. But the language of toxicity and harassment is often rich in ways the machine learning systems cannot handle. So does that mean those of us with a larger vocabulary might be able to thwart the machine? Good. Start studying, people. Get out that dictionary and the thesaurus. Maybe we can still communicate without them knowing everything we say. The comment, "You should be made into a lamp there, Johnny," is an allusion to concentration camp victims. Come on. Now, did anyone ever see The Christmas Story? There was a leg lamp in that, and that was not referring to concentration camps. Oh, and the whole thing is all based on thwarting the Nazis. So there you have it. MIT Technology Review, the toxic language, toxic comment detector is going to thwart the Nazis online. But don't worry about it, because Facebook is working on something as well. The Facebook algorithm is watching you, but there is one way to confuse it. I said that's what we all set out to do. Let's confuse the machine. Let's mix it up and turn them all into Taybots. Be pretty damn funny. You can tell a lot about a person from how they react to something. That's why Facebook's various like buttons are so powerful. And yeah, probably about a year ago, Facebook released some other buttons besides just like. There was an angry and a disbelief and a couple other ones. They're all stupid. I don't use any of that crap, but it is kind of funny because there are some people suggesting just to start doing the opposite of everything that you would normally do. Like I said, everything we do feeds the machine. So why not feed the machine gobbledygook? That would be kind of fun. And, you know, it would be like pouring salt water down the throat of a tin can robot. Clicking a reaction icon isn't just a way to register a response on Facebook. It is also a way for them to refine its sense of who you are. And of course, it is a CIA tool to profile you. So when you say love of a photo of a friend's baby and click angry on an article about the New England Patriots winning the Super Bowl, you are training, ding-a-ling, Facebook to see you in a certain way. You're a person who seems to love babies and hate Tom Brady. And the more you click, the more sophisticated Facebook's idea of who you are becomes. So make sure you don't go clicking on anything that says Allahu Akbar. So yes, any of us who use Facebook for activism are already on the red list as a potential domestic terrorist, I could guarantee you. And remember, although the reaction choices seem limited now, like, love, haha, wow, angry, or sad, up until around a year ago, this time, they only had a like button. Well, this matters because what Facebook might then do in the future with its sense of your baby-loving, Tom Brady self-hating, it might mean that Facebook will show you more photos of babies and fewer articles of football, which then might in turn affect which friends appear more frequently and prominently in your feed, and it might then affect your perception of the world. It might mean that you see a sponsored post aimed at parents of young kids, or it might mean that Facebook has shown you an outsized number of Tom Brady posts 1 week as a way to provoke you, because Facebook does have a history of experimenting on its users. We talked about that one. They actually did some experiments of trying to sway people one way or another. And there have been stories about the Alphabet agencies utilizing social media, especially in other countries, to fuel revolutions. So don't think that this research, quote unquote, research that is going on, isn't in the name of trying to crack sociology and the way humans tick, because it is. These are all experiments that are being done on us, all in the name of feeding data into the machine. You know, someday they'll be bigger, faster, smarter than us. And then we're going to go, what happened? And I'm going to sit here and say, you fed it all the data that it is now. Learned every chink in the human armor to be able to be better than us, to be able to thwart us at every turn. We did it to ourselves. Facebook has conducted covert experiments on its users to evaluate how Facebook can emotionally influence people, says Ben Grosser, professor at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign. They already have so much power, and now to give an algorithm and a corporation access to which of those things in your feed you are most reactive to, which is really useful information that tells them to not just tailor content to what you like, but they can also push your buttons. Grosser's latest project is an attempt to push back. He has now made a browser extension that he is calling Go Rando, R-A-N-D-O, which intercepts each time that you click a reaction button on Facebook and then uses a random number generator to select a different reaction for you. So if you click like, it might give you an angry, or it might get a ha-ha, or you might get a sad, Grosser told me. Users can still hover and select a specific reaction if they really want to, but this Go Rando will randomize their reactions for them and mess up Facebook's machine. I think Go Rando sounds like we should have Go Rando for everything. Actually, for even searches, we should do like create some sort of Go Rando that actually knows what your search is on this end, but by the time it pumps it into the machine and feeds it, it's some sort of gobbledygook encryption. This project is meant to encourage people to question what they are doing when they click a Facebook reaction button. You know, good on you, Ben Grosser, for raising the red flag and something we've been saying for a very long time. Every time we interact with the machine, we are feeding the machine data, which in turn makes the machine more intelligent. See, we are creating our own demise. We are feeding everything we are into this machine by just doing our daily things and interacting with our dopamine-inducing devices. It's a horrible, horrible trick they're playing on us. They've sucked us in, and now we are willingly giving it up to the machine. Don't give it up, people. He wants people to ask the question, where does this data go? who is benefiting from it and who is made most vulnerable by it. And yeah, you know, I mean, if let's get rid of all the other psychobabble crazy stuff that I talk about what your data being fed into the machine could lead to. And let's just think about Facebook, Zuckerberg with his shit-eating grin, and how many bazillions of dollars he's going to make by being able to sell your preferences to advertising companies. He's going to make bazillions. Shouldn't you get a kickback for that? Shouldn't you get a few pennies every time you click on something in your little Facebooky account to maybe use for advertising or buy more little new emoticons? Well, sure you should. They're not sharing any of that. So, you know, if him stealing from you, stealing your social data to make money off of that makes you angry, then let that be your motivator to not feed the machine. But guys, don't feed the machine in any way, shape, or form. Don't sign up for 23andMe. Find out if you're related to the queen. Swab your cheek and send it in. Check that box. So the National Institute of Health can utilize your genomics data to develop future cures. It's the same thing, people. When you are giving your data to this mass amount of data that they are collecting about humans, to then be able to deconstruct, figure out how we tick, and then reconstruct it in some synthetic format that'll be bigger, better, faster than us at some point in the future, it's all the same thing. Do not give them data. Grosser says he really wants people to think about who is reading this data. We need to think of clicking reaction buttons for the benefit of our friends, but the primary consumer of this data is not our friends. It is for the newsfeed algorithm, the advertising message profiling, the predictive analytics, he says, and all of these different systems that are looking to mine your data are hoping to understand our hopes or our fears as, at least right now, a way to decide what to sell us, but also as a way of deciding whether or not we're dangerous, or in the future as a way to decide whether or not you are worthy of getting a loan. And we talked about that as well. You know, where these software packages are even going to profile who your friends are in the future to determine whether or not you might be a lending risk. Because some of your friends do crazy things and post them online. Well, you know, you're influenced by the people you hang out with there, Johnny. Even if it's a robot. We just found out. So, I don't know about you. You might be a risk. We're going to lower your credit rating because you have foolhardy friends. I mean, we need to be thinking about this. And even though in the past, you know, they've been collecting our data all this time, we've known for years that our browsing history is never going to leave us. It's going to haunt us forever. There was a story. I don't know if we ever got to that. We might have to look at that one tomorrow. That looks at all the data they've already amassed on us and what they're doing with some of it. But in the future, these kids who have no expectation of privacy, because they don't, they share everything and anything 24/7, Snapchat it, tink. You know, they tell everyone what they are doing. And they don't care if it's illegal or not, because they don't seem to realize that 20 years from now, when they are looking to go for that promotion or they are looking to go for that job that requires some sort of sensitive approval, let's say, or you're looking to maybe get that promotion to be CEO, and they start doing little background checks on you, you know, they're going to be able to find all that data that you've been freely putting out there for the last 20 plus years for anyone and everyone to find and come up with a personality profile on you. I know we all grow out of being foolhardy. Well, not all of us, but some of us, many of us, by the time we get a little bit older. But that doesn't mean that those tendencies still aren't there. And that doesn't mean that there isn't something out there that maybe could be utilized to blackmail you in the future, that maybe could be utilized to coerce you into doing things that maybe you wouldn't have done if there wasn't something out there that maybe was very damning that you didn't realize was public. Just saying, Always think twice before clicking that post button anywhere. And word your words carefully. Grocer concedes that actually using his browser extension is at times awkward. Like when a friend has shared their good news or excitement about opening of a new art exhibit, and Grocer clicked the like button and go rando, selected a sad face reaction for him. A lot of his friends have seen him post about his project, but they're still taken aback. Like, what? Why are you sad about my art piece? But it forces people to go into the conversation about what these reactions on Facebook are and how they might mean something or not mean something, or how they can be interpreted by the machine. It is almost a compulsive, involuntary behavior at this point when you are scrolling a feed. And I think a lot of people, and yeah, it's the dopamine, guys. Ding, ding. Every time you get that little ding of an email or a message or a reaction, it gives you a little dopamine boost and it makes you feel good. So, guys, it is a compulsive, involuntary behavior at this point. And they've groomed us to have that. Start breaking it. Break away. Scroll your feed and don't click anything. Scroll your feed and screw up the machine. Start subbing pages that you really don't care about. You know, Nana's knitting clutch. Learn how to make wool quilts. But I think a lot of people can identify with the feeling of liking something, even if they really don't like it, because it is important to indicate presence or having seen an item to make your friends feel good. Give your friends a dopamine dose. But the bottom line is, every time you click a button on Facebook, every single time you indicate to a friend you've seen whatever they have posted, dun, 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 Facebook is seeing you back. And, all right, well, there you go. So